Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew.
Yeah, lock on.
Peace.
Yeah, good luck.
Yes, this is the FSP crew show. I am your host, JT, a.k.a. The Master. I am joined, as usual, on this fine Thursday, May evening, with some NBA action going on and a lot of other things going on with Jeff the Joker and Black the Bookie. And as usual, we'll engage in some conversation and give you information about the wonderful world or crazy world or suspicious world of fantasy, sports, and politics. We got a full slate of things to cover tonight. We got NBA, the NFL, maybe some basketball. We got a late breaking, early. Well, we just got something coming up here, and I'm trying to get the information to bring it to light. But before I do that, like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. The chat room is open if you'd like to jump in the chat room from anything that we would be talking about, or just jump in and say whatever you want to say or question or comment or whatever comes to you that diabolical crazy mind of yours on this fine crazy night. Put it in the chat room. We'll talk about it. We'll try to answer it or we'll address it. Let me put it that way. Without further ado, let me stop talking and just rambling on for no good reason. Let's bring my two co-hosts. We're talking about Jeff the Joker and Black the Bookie in that order.
Good evening. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, people? What's going on?
All right, my guys. All right. Like I said, we're going to be talking about the NBA. I'm trying to get this freaking link that Black gave me. And you know what? I'm not going that route because that won't help me. I'm going this route. I'll bring it on this way. Anyway, Black, like I said, we're talking about the NBA and a few things that we want to talk about in the NBA before I bring this thing up. I'll get it out first or after I start talking about. Now, everybody's been watching, interested in the NBA, especially the Dream Team minus one now. Chris Bosh is out for this series, supposedly, with an abdominal strain. We got LeBron James and Dwayne Wade in the last game they played against the Indiana Pacers, I should say, did what they normally do. This was nothing that we didn't expect. I don't know if I talked about it on this show. I may have talked about it on this show. I may have talked about it on Saturday, but I know I addressed it in one of the three shows, either this show or the FSP show on Saturday or the Master Plan on Sunday. I said the Indiana Pacers had to make this an ugly game and had to make it a close game, because when a close game happens, the Miami Heat, especially LeBron James, doesn't show up. What happened in this game, closing down near the end of the game? Now, I listened to a sports show, ESPN FM on radio, and Tim Legler was talking to Peter King. I think it was Peter King. Well, whoever it was, he was talking to the commentator, and this is what Legler said. He never seen a prime time, supposed to be the man type of player, supposed to be the heart and soul of the team, supposed to be the guy, step up to the foul line, miss a foul shot, turn to his bench, and shrug his shoulders with his arms out like, I can't believe I missed a shot. Instead of like a big-time player would normally do, if he missed a shot, stay focused at the basket and wait for the next shot to take. Looked like LeBron at when it was near the end of the game when he missed two foul shots, the first of two foul shots. He was looking for support from the bench. What player, and I'm talking to Black and Jeff, what big prime-time player that you know would make that move at that time looking for sympathy or support from the bench in a crucial situation when he missed a foul shot? Talk to me, Black, and then Jeff.
I don't believe there's any NBA player that would do such thing. I don't believe it all.
Jeff?
I can't think of anybody, but, believe it or not, I'm almost like a LeBron sympathizer. I know a lot of people don't like the guy, but the decision, all that stuff, that's old news. And he's with Bosch out. He's had to cover power forwards, which isn't easy for him. And now it's Miami's a two-man show. Him and Wade. And the other night, the leading scorer off the bench was 5 points. That's not doing it. That's not enough. And I heard they're talking to Greg Oden, which is not going to help them this year, maybe next year. And
not going to help them any year. Oden holds no minutes. Why they even entertain the thought of bringing in Greg Oden to this team next year? Their best move is to try to make a play for Dwight Howard, and I don't see how they can try to get that under that salary cap.
Well, the thing that, this might be a little before your time, Black, but them picking up Oden to me sounds a lot like, back in the 80s when the Celtics picked up Bill Walton, because Bill Walton, like Oden, was always hurt, but everybody knew when he was healthy he was decent, but he was never healthy. And in that role, coming off the bench, fewer minutes, he was able to be a valuable contributor to some championship teams, and maybe at this point, that's the role for Oden. He's already, he could retire in his mid-20s. He's not going to go to Sacramento to sit on the bench, but go someplace like Miami where he's got a chance of getting a ring. He might be happy to fill that role. So it makes me think of Bill Walton with the Celtics.
Wow. Okay. Right now the Miami Heat are playing the Indiana Pacers, and the Pacers are winning right now. It's 41-40 with a minute 45 left in the second quarter. So with Chris Bosh, who I really don't like Chris Bosh. I think he's a soft player, but apparently he's a very important cog in his dream team, because it seemed like LeBron and Wade can't with all their MVPs and one championship and prime time and Olympic medals and whatever against a young, very young Indianapolis team that have all they can handle. I had said before, and I keep saying it again, that if you keep the game close, you have in my opinion, you have a 95% chance of winning the game. That 5% will be a fluke by either Dwayne Wade and especially LeBron James in pulling the game out when it comes crunch time. It's been proven in the past in the playoffs. It's been proven in the past in the regular season. Last year, everybody gave the excuse that they had just gotten together. They didn't learn each other, didn't know each other that well. They have no excuse this year. No, because they've had a full season. It's a shortened season, but they've played at least one season with each other. And so they have no excuse if they at least get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think they have a shot, even with Chris Bosh in there, and especially if Chris Bosh is not there to win the championship, because there's two strong teams in the West that are waiting from the weak sister from the East to play them and hand them an ass whooping. And I think it's coming as soon as whoever comes out of the East plays whoever comes out of the West. But I got this story up here, people. I got it from Black. Black's got it from supposedly a reliable source. It's, I'm getting it from the MarsReel.com website. The title is NBA Officiating Controversy, Floyd Mayweather and Referee Greg Willard Involved in Possible Scandal. Uh-oh. Here we go. Uh-oh. Is this another NBA scandal with a referee? We'll see. The NBA may yet have another officiating scandal on their hands. I'm going to read this article just as it is, so I don't make any mistakes on what's breaking down here.
Fresh off the presses, people. Fresh off the presses, courtesy of my boys over at the Mars Reel. They always do a good job. I see them every summer. Courtesy of the Mars Reel. Go ahead, Jerry. Let it rip.
Okay. April 29th, 2012. The Memphis Grizzlies face off against the L.A. Clippers in Game 1 of their first-round playoff series. After building what seemed to be an insurmountable lead, the Grizzlies looked like they were in control entering the fourth quarter. That is, until the Clippers erased a 24-point deficit in the final quarter to come back and shock the Grizzlies by 1 point on their home floor. The game became an instant classic, and the happiest person outside of the Clippers organization after the incredible comeback was dun, 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 dun. Floyd Mayweather. Yes, people, I'm talking about Floyd Mayweather was a very happy person. Floyd allegedly placed a $1.8 million bet on the game favoring the Clippers. The Clippers were a 6-point underdog in the matchup. AOL Sporting News was one of the media sites reporting the bet. Now, what's surprising is Floyd Mayweather did not tweet a picture of his winning betting slip, which he normally does. He made a big bet on the Ohio State, the championship game with Ohio State, $135,000 ticket, because I'm looking at it right now. So he usually makes a copy of it and puts it on the in some social media for people to look at it. And he's been known to make huge wagers on sporting events. So this is nothing new. I'm going to continue with the article. He later denied even placing the bet, saying, and this is a quote, "No, why is they making these lies? These rumors. Somebody text me that. No, it's not true." End quote. Now, could it be that the bet was never placed? Or did Mayweather want to repel any attention that would have been directed at the bet? If it's the latter, then what would make Mayweather hide the fact that he just won some serious cash on a miracle game? Okay, rewind to the 2007 NBA playoffs. I think everybody knows this one. The Spurs and the Suns meet for the third game of their series on May 12, 2007, which is considered one of the most poorly officiated games in NBA history. As Bill Simmons put it in his column on ESPN, "Congratulations to Greg Willard, Tim Donaghy, and Eddie F. Rush for giving us the most atrociously officiated game of the playoffs so far. Game 3 of the Suns-Spurs series, Bennett Salvatore, Tom Washington, and Violet Palmer may have been outraged that they were involved in this mess. Good golly, most of the calls favored the Spurs, but I don't think even the refs were biased. They were so incompetent that there was no rhyme or reason to anything that was happening. Other than the latest call in NBA history, a shooting foul for Manu Ginobili, whistled 3 seconds after the play, when everybody was already running in the other direction. My favorite moment happened near the end when the game was already over and they called a cheap bump on Bruce Bowen against Nat. So the cameras caught Mike D'Antoni, the most entertaining coach in the league if he's not getting calls, screaming sarcastically, 'Why start now? Why bother? What's the What a travesty. Not since the cocaine era from 1978 to 1986 has the league faced a bigger ongoing issue than crappy officiating. The officials on duty in Game 3 were Eddie Rush, this sounds familiar, Greg Willard, and none other than Tim Donaghy. Donaghy was the epicenter of an NBA referee scandal involving bets that he made on the games he officiated. The full rundown of the incident can be found in an article by the Washington Post. Donaghy pleaded guilty about 2 months after the game between the Spurs and the Suns. You decide whether or not the game was fixed. Okay, now let's fast forward to this. According to Bob, Greg Willard was a guest of Mr. Mayweather. Now, Greg Willard happened to be in the controversy of the game in 2007, and he happens to show up in this game also. I'll read it again. According to Bob, Greg Willard was a guest of Mr. Mayweather at two training sessions before his fight against Miguel Cotto. Everybody knows if they watch, pay attention to fighting, the fight was on May 5th, 2012. Less than a week after the Clippers' remarkable comeback in Game 1, Bob is a betting guru and has this page set up for those who don't find him reliable. If you don't take his word for it, another source wishing to remain anonymous said the training sessions happened in mid-April, and yes, Greg Willard was there. The relationship between the two was unheard of up to this point, but the fact that Willard was able to attend the Floyd Mayweather training session must mean the two were somewhat close. You have to wonder if Greg Willard knew of the bet when he was in Memphis officiating Game 1 against the Clippers when they made that insane comeback. The NBA has often criticized for its inconsistent officiating and possible controlling of games, and this evidence certainly makes the case that these problems could still be occurring. The purity of the game of basketball may have been tarnished once again in these playoffs if this ordeal turns out to be true. There is no doubt our beloved NBA needs to make a serious change in how our game is officiated. Now, if you go on this site, you can see clips of the game of the Clippers, and you can also see clips of the game of the Suns versus San Antonio Spurs, which happened about 5 years ago. Just to make a point of what has been alleged here. Jeff, I'm a Black told me about this story. I read it. You're a conspiracy theorist type of person here. No knock on you, but I want your first opinion on what I read here.
Well, I take that as a compliment. And right off the bat, and I'm on the road right now. When I get home, I'm going to have to take a look at that. The NBA should have cleaned house after the Donaghy scandal. And even if there's no proof that something wrong happened, the thing is, when it comes to your credibility, you don't even want the appearance that something might have happened. And that's why frequently, not just in sports, but in other fields, there's strict rules about any possible conflict of interest. I didn't know that Mayweather was such a big gambler. I mean, even for a gambler, $1 million is a chunk. And I find it hard to believe that he would put all that bet with one bookmaker, because that raises red flags. I mean, that's a lot of money. And, I mean, if it had been, you know, a college game or something, or maybe a regular season game, that could get something taken off the board. They track that. And you think... I guess boxing doesn't have strict control, but it doesn't look good when a top fighter is gambling on other sports. Just for appearances, it doesn't necessarily mean they're crooked. That's why the NFL players are not allowed to gamble on other sports. And I don't think he's not a bookie, but if he's a big-time gambler, then NBA referees shouldn't be allowed to associate with him, because want to go way back, 40 years ago, Joe Namath got in trouble for associating with gamblers. NFL players are not allowed to associate with known gamblers. There you go. You know, a lot of it's about appearances.
Black?
Man, I'm waiting to hear more from the story. I'm trying to get the writer on. The writer just emailed me and said it wasn't available tonight. I'm going to try to see if we can get him on for next Thursday and see what happens with the story going forward. Like I'm saying, it just came through a couple of minutes ago, right before we came on air, so I didn't get the time to digest it. I just heard you read it, but I'm trying to get more sources on it.
This is going to be and the thing about it, the guy who was in the game 5 years ago was Tim Donaghy, is in this game. The Greg Willard, he's in this game. I mean, Donaghy said that at one point he says, "I'm not the only one. I'm the only one who got caught." If I'm not mistaken,
exactly correct with that statement.
Yeah. So. Once, maybe a coincidence. Twice, you're in the middle of something like this, and it's twice, and supposedly you were associating with the person who made this huge bet before the game. I'm thinking there's fire before the smoke even comes. But this is hot. This is real hot, and I think you're right, Jeff. I think they have to clean house. I think this guy's reputation, this guy is not too far from being no longer working for the NBA as an official. Like I said, once maybe. I mean, it could be a coincidence, but if you're caught up in this and this story comes viral. Your name comes up again in something like this, the NBA, in my opinion, has no choice but to say, hasta la vista, goodbye, bye-bye, see you later, because we're not going to put that, idea of that we're being, we're fixing games, or we're in the habit of trying to, steer games in a certain way through the officials, and that's real important to any professional sport because that the fans drive the sport. So if you lose the fans lose faith and think the games are fixed, they're going to be losing a lot of people coming to actually view the games live. So. And that's revenue driven there. So if it comes to money or a ref, the ref is gone. And I would think that NBA security is probably going to be deep into all these refs now. I mean, really. You got one guy that's coming up twice. They're going to have to be dealing with all these guys to see what's going on and the habits and their association with people outside of the game. So, anyway, I wanted to play this before.
What is going on with the NBA? You got fixing scandals. You got flopping scandals. What's happening to today?
You know what? You're right, Blood.
What is going on here?
And one of the things that happened before the first game in Indiana against Miami. I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying Indiana. Was that the head coach of the Indiana Pacers, and congrats to Larry Bird for being the first and probably, I think, the first and only player to win NBA title, Coach of the Year, and NBA Executive of the Year. So I got to hand it to the guy from
French Lick, Indiana. He's named Larry Legend for a reason, and you see why. Man, the guy's had a phenomenal career. Everything he's accomplished, phenomenal career.
Yes, he has. And I got to give him congrats. And he He's picked up a coach that I didn't really know too much about, but this guy's a hell of a coach because he's got these young players playing at a high level, even against the Miami Heat. And the game, let me what's the score now in this game. It's tied at halftime, 43 apiece. But before the first game was played, the coach came out and said that the Miami Heat, just like a Phil Jackson or back in the day a Pat Riley, I can't think of any other coaches that have fired a salvo like this across the bow. I'm trying to get the refs call more for them versus the other. Call the Miami Heat the biggest flopping team in the NBA. Now, that's a heck of a statement to make, in my opinion, because of a lot of teams in the NBA flop a lot.
Pacers coach Frank Vogel called the. Pacers coach Frank Vogel,
hold on a minute here.
Vogel called the.
I'm having some technical difficulties. Let me play this. This was by a commentator asking Stephen A. about the accusation that the head coach at Indiana, wow, Indiana Pacers made against the Miami Heat, and Stephen A. responds to it.
Pacers coach Frank Vogel called the Heat, I want to get this right, the biggest flopping team in the NBA, and he's worried that LeBron, Dwayne, Chris Bosh could get the star treatment from the officials. Just coach speak or the truth?
Well, I think it's coach speak because I don't think, even though they'll do it from time to time, let's not act like that's the reason that they're superstars in this league. They're superstars because they're superstars. They're superstars because they can ball better than anybody that the Pacers have to throw at them. Frank Vogel knows this. Brian Shaw, a world champion and a future head coach in this game. He's the associate head coach on that squad just arriving for this season. He knows it. Larry Bird, a Hall of Famer. He knows it. He knows what the Heat has, and he knows that the Indiana Pacers do not have that. Now, they're formidable. They're long. They're athletic. They're physical. They're old school. They have no fear. They will put you on your back. They will make games ugly. And because of those things, they can make this series tough. George Hill, Paul George, Roy Hibbert, David West, Danny Granger. These guys can play. Collison can play as well. But do they have enough to beat the Heat? No. They do have enough to make it interesting, however. And one of the elements that they're going to use to their advantage is complaining to the officials before the series even began because they think it's a tactic that has worked in the past with various other coaches, even ones including Phil Jackson, Larry Brown, guys like Craig Popovich and others.
Okay. This is a quote from Frank Vogel. Every drive to the basket, they have guys not making a play on the ball, but sliding in front of drivers. Oftentimes, they're falling down even before contact is even being made. He also went on to say, it'll be interesting to see how the series is officiated. Well, Frank, you're 1-1 right now. You're tied at the halftime. You have the Heat reeling, in my opinion, and I know what happened the second game with LeBron and Dwayne. Yeah, that's what I said. They choked. They choked. They're damn right they choked. Anyway, okay, I'm opening up to Jeff.
It'll be very interesting to see if Hollywood gets involved in this act with the Oscars and the Academy Awards. We'll add a new special category for flopping involving sports.
Well, Jeff, you got anything to say on this, Jeff?
I don't like the flopping. It got old real fast. The thing is, these guys need acting lessons. Traditionally, the stars know how to work the refs. They don't flop. You know what I mean? That's taking it too far. And I'll tell you, a guy who flops, Blake Griffin, is all over the place now. And it detracts from enjoyment of the game. I don't like it. I don't get it. If I want to see flopping, I'd watch soccer. And considering all the nonsense in the NBA, David Stern made a strong statement against flopping. I guess that's where we draw the line, you know. I'll say, talking about Indiana and Larry Bird, that guy's got some basketball resume. In addition to, you know, player, coach, executive of the year, player of the year in college, member of the Dream Team, how many times was he, playoff MVP, all-star MVP, all that stuff. I don't think anybody can match that. And a lot of the great players were not great coaches and execs. I mean, or owners. Look at Michael Jordan. But, Larry, he's all about basketball. That's his thing. Serious guy, like a no-frills kind of guy. I don't mean that as a knock. And there's a good documentary about him and Magic, and it gives a little better understanding of Bird because, he was always kind of a private kind of guy, and it's a good documentary if you ever get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I've seen it about the two guys, and I think they made a commercial at Larry's property or something like that. They made a commercial together is when they started becoming good friends.
That's
what you're talking
about,
Jeff?
Yeah, and that's when it started. And then by the time they were on the Dream Team, they were inseparable.
Right.
Yeah. Good
stuff. Yeah, because they had a lot of animosity because they really didn't know each other until they came with that commercial that they did on the Larry's property with the basketball court. Just like you said, they're inseparable. They have a lot of respect for each other, and they're real good friends with each other. So, and it's ironic, but the both of them are very successful in business and also in the NBA. And Magic is even branching out and being an owner or part owner in Major League Baseball, which is. He's blown up, Magic. Larry is. Everyone thought Larry was pretty aloof. Really didn't like the limelight too much. Just liked the game of basketball, old school. Just like you said, Jeff. He just liked the game of basketball and didn't like all the other frills that went with it. So anyway, let's move on. We all have some other NBA stuff that we want to go through. Let's go through this one because this is not a shock to me, and it's probably not a shock to a lot of people that have been watching the NBA playoffs. I'm talking about the kids from Oklahoma. We're talking about Kevin Durant, Mr. Westbrook. I have to call him Mr. because I dogged him out for quite a while, but every time I mention his name, I call him Mr. Westbrook because I'm trying to play due respect because he's definitely came to play this year. I have to call James Harden. This was became a rivalry last year because the Young Guns last year delved into the playoffs and were stubbornly eliminated from the playoffs last year, learned a valuable, extremely valuable lesson from last year about how to play in the playoffs and what playoff basketball need to be played. Handed the Lakers an ass whooping in the first game. Just royally handed them. They had Lakers came off of Denver. Tough series, a seven-game series. Oklahoma was sitting home for about a week or so, waiting for whoever won that series to play. And the Lakers out in the first game. In the second game, the game didn't even score 80 points. Now, this is what happened. The Lakers decided to play a low post game, feed the ball to the big men to try to slow the game down and to keep the score down and hope to have a chance of winning it. They were up by, if I'm not mistaken, they were up by at least 6 or 7 with 2 minutes to play in the game. And everyone knows what happened. The Oklahoma City Thunder wound up winning the game without Kobe taking the last shot, and I got something to say about that. Without Kobe taking the last shot, they won the game 76-75, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what the score was. I heard this on ESPN this morning. I don't know if you guys know this, and hopefully I can get this right. This is supposed to be a true fact. Since 19, Kobe, let me put it this way. Kobe has not made a game-winning shot in the playoffs since 2006. Do you guys hear what I just said?
Yeah, I heard it.
Kobe Bryant, of all the games that have been played, all the you know, the late game heroics that Kobe Bryant has been in, he hasn't made a late game winning shot since 2006. I didn't know that statistic, and I was like stunned that that all the time that this will be 6 years. 2006 to now, it's five or six seasons, and he hasn't taken a game-winning shot, or he hasn't made a game-winning shot since 2006. And what happened last night? Because Kobe Bryant, I think, was like 0-for-6 in the last 6 minutes or something like that. Blake took the shot. Was it like 2 or 3 seconds left in the game? He took a three-pointer or a 2-3-pointer, whatever it was, and he missed it off the front of the rim or whatever. And much to Kobe's credit, he was pissed off. You can see the total disgust in him. I tell you what, man. I don't know about you guys, but I think Mike Brown is one and done. What about you, Jeff?
I mean, I heard and I saw the stat about Kobe, and there's a famous quote. There's three kinds of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. And I can't deny those numbers, but I'd like to see the big picture. Possessions for shots during the last 10 seconds of the game. I'm curious, you know, what about if they expanded that to the last 20 seconds of the game? What are his numbers for the regular season? And also, that shooting is just one of the ways you could win a game. A guy like him, he could create for other guys on his team and win a game like that. Unfortunately, one of those guys was open and missed a shot. Which happens, you know, people are criticizing Metta World Peace for passing that guy. He was the open man. There's no way he could have got that ball to Kobe. So I'd like to see the whole picture on that Kobe stat. But it's interesting stuff. If he makes that shot. You know, L.A., it's the series is 1-1, but now Oklahoma's up 2-0. And then it looks like, wow, if L.A. could have taken care of business in the first round, they'd be better rested, and they wouldn't be behind the eight ball against Oklahoma City. But I'll tell you, a lot of people are going to be keeping an eye on the refs, and it's very hard to get a sweep in the playoffs. And the NBA's got to have these guys. They got to call these games straight to reestablish some kind of credibility, because if it looks like a WWE event for Game 3 and 4, and they, you know, and there's talk of the refs letting LA even up the series, they don't need that at this point. They need to reestablish credibility.
Chip Black.
You're saying that Mike Brown is a one and done, huh?
I'm telling
Ron Artest, he made the play that he could make. They ran the flare for Kobe. Unfortunately, Kobe didn't get open in time. They were risking running that 5 second inbound call there. That's why Ron Artest made the pass to Blake. Look, see, Blake was wide open. Even if I was playing the game and I'm looking for Kobe, I'm going to make that pass to Blake. He was wide open in the corner. Sometimes you make that shot, sometimes you miss that shot. There's a lot of pressure. You're on the road. If he would have made the shot, you wouldn't hear any talk of this, but unfortunately he missed it. This is not the same Lakers team from last year, and this is not a very good Lakers team. That happens to be fact. It's not a very good Lakers team. Aside from Kobe Bryant, who, yes, people, has lost a step. No one wants to admit that, but he has lost a step. You have Andrew Bynum and Paul Gasol, made a world peace. He's off and on, but you look at the rest of that roster. This is not championship material there. Mike Brown, I give him credit. He's from the Popovich tree. He's a good defensive coach. I don't know what type of offense he calls. I don't know what type of plays he draws up. But, yeah, I have to agree with you, man. He might be a one and done in L.A. Might be a one and done in L.A. It's going to be very, very hard for the Lakers to get back in the series. Now that you have back-to-back games on Friday and Saturday night with one day for traveling, it's going to be tough. It's a tough series. I don't see the Lakers survive.
And just to update the Miami Heat and Indiana Pacers, Jesus Christ, 55-48 in favor of Indiana.
Wow.
Excuse me, 55-48 halfway through the third quarter in favor of Indiana. Yes, sir.
Mm.
We got a I would say a major upset in the making, but we got the makings of trouble down at South Beach. My question is this now, since we're talking about the playoffs, and I want to go briefly back to the Heat. What happens to Eric Bolstras if the Miami Heat, for some godforsaken reason, don't get past the Pacers? What do you think? What happens to him? Do you think he gets canned, or are they going to make some changes with the Big Three? Any one of you guys?
I'll go first. Sorry, Black. Thinking of that, if the Heat get bounced in this round of the playoffs, it's a situation where I don't know if they could rightfully blame Eric Spoelstra, but that sometimes they make a sacrificial lamb, and it's a lot easier to fire a coach than a player. And then I'm thinking, if I'm getting way ahead of myself, because Mike Brown is one and done in L.A., wasn't he an assistant in Cleveland with LeBron? Isn't LeBron friendly with him? Because they do that sometimes. They want to keep the stars happy. You think Mike Brown could end up in Miami, maybe?
He was the head coach in Cleveland.
Oh, duh, yeah. I think wasn't he friendly with LeBron?
He let LeBron do whatever he wanted to do. And he coached the rest of the guy. That's going to be a crazy situation to even entertain that. Look, Spoelstra, he does a good job of drawing the players, but those guys have to execute, man. I just tell LeBron is being burdened now by having to play some minutes of power forward, but, man, it's the playoffs. You got to suck it up, man. If you want that championship, you got to go out there and grab it.
Yeah, it's not going to be given to you. And I have to go back to say that LeBron and Chris Bosh, especially LeBron, went to Miami Heat to expect, for lack of a better term, the championship be handed to him. And it ain't going to happen like that. And I think a lot of frustration is coming to light. Not as much last year as this year, because a lot these teams are better than they were last year, especially the Pacers. You're young. The Sixers, they're young. The Celtics are old, wily veterans. You got a Miami Heat team that, in my opinion, still doesn't have an identity.
And you look before LeBron got there. Dwayne Wade was the man of Miami. I remember Dwayne Wade putting up 40-point games against the Boston Celtics. I think
right.
A little bit of LeBron has rubbed off on Dwayne and made Dwayne's game just a little bit soft.
Right. I totally agree with you. Let me do this commercial real quick. We got about 16 and a half minutes left in the show. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. We'll be back after this.
Indu Studio 9 and Corrupted Nature Entertainment presents Wasted Wednesday Ray Day Hip Hop Showcase, hosted by D-Champ CEO with 93.9's DJ Analyze on the ones and twos, starting Wednesday, April 25th, and every Wednesday following at Ross Lounge, 4809 Georgia Avenue, Northwest. Doors open at 9, ladies free till 11, and $5 after. Men $10 all night, $3 Ross Punch, $100 bottles, and group of 5 females get a free bottle of champagne. 21 and up to enter. For showcase sign up, contact D-Champ at 202-440-6550. Be there.
And the score is 5 minutes left in the third quarter, give or take, 59-50, Indiana. Okay, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. I want to move on to what I think is a pretty interesting thing that's going on in the down south. A linebacker from the New Orleans Saints, I know you guys know what I'm talking about, Jonathan Vilma, has decided to sue Roger Goodell for defamation of character pertaining to the Bounty Gate. And saying that in no uncertain terms did he have anything to do with that.
He's suing the NFL or he's suing Roger Goodell?
He's suing Roger Goodell.
Wow.
He's suing Roger Goodell. And I wish I had the exact quote. Let me see if I can find it somewhere. But in the quote he said he had he had not paid for anybody to hurt anyone at any time. Let me see if I can find this thing real quick.
Wow, that's big, man. And along with other news from the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles have also read up LeSean McCoy, Shady McCoy, 5 years, $45 million.
Right, okay. Yes, let me say this statement first, because I got the quote that Jonathan Vilma made, and I'll go from there. On Twitter, Vilma stated, "Maybe this will get some people's attention." That was a quote. And as I've said before, and this is capitalized, I've never paid or intended to pay any amount of money to any player for intentionally hurting an opponent. So, his attorney is supposedly what the both of them want is the Roger Goodell to produce the evidence. Show me the evidence that says that I've done this. This is a lawsuit directed to trying to win his reputation back, for one. And also for Roger Goodell, if you have solid evidence, let me see it, because you're ruining my reputation by saying that I've done these things and you suspended me. So he's trying to get back into get back into the league by this season with this lawsuit, and also trying to bring to light any kind of evidence that Roger Goodell and I guess the NFL in essence has to either say he did this or reaffirm what he's saying that he never did this. I don't know what you guys got any opinion on this. I'll go to Black first and then we run with Jeff.
Yeah, that's a pretty bold and strong move by Jonathan Vilma. I wish him luck. He's going against the other evil empire known as Roger Goodell. this is definitely going to be a tough case for him to win, but if his lawyers feel that strongly that they don't have evidence, I welcome to see the case. I'm willing to see the case.
Jeff?
I mean, personally, I'm totally against the bounties, and from what I've read and seen, it sounds like something bad was going on there in New Orleans, but since the penalties were handed down, I've been sympathetic to Vilma. Even if he is guilty of that, I'm not sure if he deserves to be suspended a whole year. That's a very harsh penalty for a player, because careers are so short. And the thing is, usually it's not the same burden of proof as a court of law, but in a court of law and a lot of other situations, you have the right to face your accusers. And it doesn't look like, you know, Vilma got that chance. And I guess if he files suit against the NFL, it goes to court, and then they might have to produce that evidence, which, who knows, could be very flimsy. So even if he's guilty, I'm sympathetic to Vilma. So I thought even if he's guilty, maybe half a season suspension, keeps him, something like that. At least he could still go to training camp. He could still play half a year, get half a year salary, because the way suspension is now, he can't work out, he can't go to camp. I mean, he's totally cut off for a year. That's very harsh.
That's extremely harsh, especially when you have your head coach in the same situation. He's suspended for a year, so You got a head coach and then the defensive coordinator who's in charge of or the head coach for the defense for Jonathan Vilma. So I'm saying that the head coach knew, the GM knew, and the defensive coordinator knew. Now that's telling me that it's institutionalized. What is a player supposed to do if your coach is telling you this is how it's going to be run? If he's going to go against that, well, that could blackball him in the league for once, and that could put him on the outs for another, even get him cut. Let me put it that way. He can even get him cut because he's not adhering to supposedly, in quote, team policy. So, to be suspended for a year, they're saying that he was in cahoots with all three of managers, meaning the defensive coordinator, the head coach, and the general manager. He was right. He was lockstep with them, doing this, agreeing and doing the same thing and encouraging this. Files in federal court, that means sooner or later that's going to have to come to light. They're going to have to show some type of evidence. Something's going to happen. Something's going to give. Stay tuned. Let me put it that way. Stay tuned to your bat channels, because the fact is that things should get pretty interesting in that light. All right, we got about 9 minutes left in the show. Now I want to talk about what you talked about, Black. They finally decided to pony up to. Let's stay in the Big Easy first. Was Drew Brees I'm talking about. It's extremely frustrating that we're in this situation. This is a quote from Drew Brees. I know I'm certainly committed to getting a long-term deal, as I have been throughout this entire process, but he's saying that there's been a lack of communication and is disappointed because of that. And he's saying that there should be a sense of urgency, and it seems like there isn't. Now, this is Drew Brees. This is your franchise quarterback, the glue that that makes this machine run. Who is beloved in New Orleans, beloved by his fellow players, and you're balking on whether you want to pay this guy the going rate for top-notch quarterbacks. I know there's a few teams that would gladly take Drew Brees and pay him the money that he wants. Talk to me, Black. Talk to me, Jeff, and then Black.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised it's dragged on that long, because the Saints are a team. They need some good news for the players, for that fan base, and re-upping with Drew Brees would be some good news. And this is a guy who got franchised before and got screwed because of it back when he was with San Diego.
Right.
And he really did. And I remember that game. It was a, quote, meaningless late-season game. He didn't have a new contract. And, you know, he played the game like he should. And his shoulder got destroyed. And fortunately, he was able to rehabilitate. But then after that shoulder injury, the Chargers didn't want to know him, but he had the last laugh because New Orleans took a chance on him, and it worked out for both parties. If Brees back then in San Diego, if he would say, "I'm not playing in a meaningless game. I don't want to get hurt. I don't have a contract," if he would have been vilified. And I'm not sure what the Saints are thinking. I don't know if it's a cap issue or what, but they need some good news, and that would be Simon Brees.
Black.
Do you even think Drew Brees wants to even sign right now with all the mess that's going on in New Orleans right now?
You don't think so, huh?
I don't think so. I think he rides out this season, and he gets on out of there next year.
Well, in order to do that, he's got to sign his tender.
We'll see what Brees is thinking about right now. This is a very depressing situation to me. It's a very depressing situation to Drew Brees. I'm sure he's thinking he wants no part of New Orleans after all these things are coming out, more stories are coming out now. Man, the guy, I would love to have him in Dallas maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I would have loved to have him in Dallas, but at the tail end towards his career, I wouldn't want him right now. There's plenty of teams out there who could still take him, though.
I feel
for Drew Brees right now, man.
You mean to tell me you wouldn't, if you had an opportunity to take Drew Brees, you would not want Drew Brees over Tony Romo?
Not right now. Not right now. Maybe 5 years ago.
Oh, my.
You
got
to
be kidding me. I think Drew Brees has got plenty of at least 5 years left in his game. At least 5 years left in his game. He hasn't taken a lot of hits. Like a lot of quarterbacks, especially your quarterback, Tony Romo, he hasn't taken those type of hits. He's one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. You're entitled to your opinion. If I had a shot to take him over Matt Schaub, I would take him in a heartbeat, guaranteed. You thought I was going to say Tim Tebow or Mark Sanchez? Not today.
I actually was going to say Kevin Cole, but that's just me.
Anyway, let's talk about LeSean McCoy real quick. Yeah, he signed a 5-year, $45 million contract. He kept it quiet. He did what Deshaun told him to do, basically, or advised him to do. Keep his mouth shut. Do what you got to do. And don't make any kind of noise, even though I don't think McCoy is built like that anyway. And you're going to get paid. You're right. This is a great move for the Eagles. I call McCoy Westbrook Light. I wouldn't call him Westbrook Light. He's damn near Brian Westbrook because he does the same type of thing Westbrook does. So
yeah, I'm definitely surprised that the Eagles gave up money. Definitely surprised. But along with the good news for the Eagles, there's another bit of bad news. Jason Peters, fresh off of his surgery, re-injures himself and has to go back to surgery again and is lost for the season again.
Now, I heard that. What was he doing? Because I heard that they may take money from Suggs and Peters because of their injuries. Was he doing something outside of football that he re-injured himself?
He was on, I guess, some type of machine that was supposed to help him get better, and the machine actually malfunctioned.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. Excuse me. All right. Well, we got about 3 minutes left in the show.
I have to get this out. I did not know this tonight. I didn't know you guys were watching the game and actually let this go past me without mentioning this stat. In 94 postseason games, including tonight, Dwayne Wade has never gone scoreless in the first half until tonight.
Wow. Wow. Well, let me put it this way. I'm looking at online. I'm not looking at game live, but I'm looking at GameCast through ESPN. With 1:47 left in the third quarter, the score is 66-55, Indiana.
Wow.
So the Young Bucks are given all of the Dream Team minus one, all they can handle. Now, I wanted to end it like this. Hold on
not
a minute
two,
here. I got,
not three,
I,
not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Let me do it like this. I wanted to end this show with this. Understand something, people. Tomorrow we're starting a new show. And I think we have my new host on the line right now. We're talking about Mac Williams. Hello there, Mac.
What's up, baby?
Mac and I, Mac being the host, is Mac, I'm going to give it to you. You promote the show that's going to happen tomorrow evening.
Well, you know, the show is called No Chaser with Mac Williams, Jerry Taylor. It's going to be a good show. We're going to do it big tomorrow for 2 hours. A lot of things to talk about. We're going to be talking LeBron, number as a pretty much gonna start out with that pretty much after a few things I have to say. Then we'll get off into some politics and, you know, wherever the conversation goes, it goes. It's gonna be a 2-hour show. We're gonna start it big. Just wanna let all you Heat fans and LeBron fans to know as of right now it's the third with a 1:16, and right now Indiana's beating y'all with corn stalks. So anyway, the show will be good tomorrow, and we will be on at 7. Please tune in. All you people that have been posting me on Facebook, that have been arguing me for years about LeBron and everything else, please call in. Don't post me after the show. Don't post me no more, man. If you really want to say what you got to say, call in and let's talk about it. But that's the show pretty much, so, that's it, man.
Hey, Mac, this is Black, man. I wish you a very successful debut. I know you are going to kill She Brown tomorrow. I don't know what's going on with the Heat. I don't know why Dwayne Wade is going scoreless in the first half against Indiana, but it should be a very interesting show tomorrow.
Yeah, well, right now Dwayne Wade's bleeding because Granger just gave him one from the three-point line right in his mouth. So, you know, and, you know, LeBron trying to play fake tough and Granger getting his face. That's like the third time he's gotten his face in this series, and LeBron don't want it. So, you know. Dude, soft as toilet paper. But anyway, we'll talk about Lee Choke tomorrow. We'll talk about him tomorrow, and all people can call in and call me all kind of names and everything else. And then me and Terry are gonna get into some politics and some other things, you know, just to get the people stirred up. So, you know, we'll see y'all tomorrow, man. I'm excited.
All right, thanks for calling me, man. I'll be talking to you.
No doubt,
no doubt, man. All right, man.
All right. Black.
Take it easy.
All right.
This is Zeal, people. We're here again next week at 8 o'clock. Me, Jeff, Black, FSP crew. And then on Saturday, it will be the FSP show with Vic Gardner and myself as the co-host. And Black as the another co-host. And like I said, we have a new show. That's debuting tomorrow night, a 2-hour show, starting at 7 o'clock with Mac Williams as the host, and I am the co-host, called No Chasers, straight with No Chasers. Let me put it that way. We're going to be bumping heads. I can see it, but we're going to be agreeing on a few things also. So it's going to be a controversial show, I do believe. Tune in if you got an opinion. I want to hear. We'll probably knock you down, but I still want to hear. and also, besides those two shows, Friday and Saturday, we have the Master Plan. I host that on 10 o'clock in the morning on Sundays. It's an hour show. I do my thing there on an hour show, and people drop in and out. I have my opinions on things just like everybody else. Some of them are a little controversial also. But it is what it is. I'm going to give my co-host a chance to give their last shots before we get out of here. Talk to me, Jeff.
It's been a pleasure. Tune in next week.
And Blast?
Thank you, people. I didn't get to give you guys my Manny Pacquiao introduction, but from now on, I'm known as Manny Pacquiao throughout all of these shows. There's a special fight that I'm very interested in making, and so I want to politic to get this fight.
Okay. Anyway, with about 7 seconds left in the third quarter, the score is 69-55. Indiana is starting to run away with this.
Ugly.
It's end of the third quarter, I should say, 69-55. And with that being said, we've lost a disco queen from the past. I don't know if anybody's realized this. Donna Summer has lost her battle with...
very tough couple of days. Yesterday, I don't know if you heard, but... The Godfather of Go-Go, DC's own Chuck Brown passed. And then today they had the news that Donna Summer was just an extra whammy. And also Monday, I believe, the lead singer for Parliament, the female singer for Parliament, also passed away. So it was very tough.
Really? Yes, Donna Summer. And this is a bad way to go. I've had several family members, and probably everybody's family has had people who passed away from some form of cancer, and she lost her battle with cancer at a young age of 63. maybe she rests in peace. I know I danced many a time at discos with Donna Summer playing on the disco for the disco floor. So with that being said, Donna Summer, this is dedicated to you from Black, Jeff, and myself from the FSP Crew Show. We're going to close it out with The Last Dance, which is I propose for Donna Summer. The FSP Crew Show is out.